Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
Oh, hi there, bench warmers. You guys, you'd been seeing me so much, you thought, oh my goodness, last week we only had one episode. We only had one piece of content to devour. Where was everything else? I need to make sure that you keep your fix. I've seen enough like cartel and mafia movies, so I know how that all works. And I needed a break. I'm finally on my fall break. So I'm going to say it now. I'm going to start the episode off with it. You will get your makeup top of the mountain. You will get your makeup Sunday scaries. Tomorrow I'll be live in the morning and once in the afternoon to make sure that I get those two shows out there. There's a lot that happened. Just talking about break and everything like that for schooling for Sunday scaries. And then obviously I'll have some Division II knowledge to talk. You see that scrolling down at the bottom of the screen there, Nico? Do you want to read what that says there?
See you, Blunders.
Top 25 team.
Yeah, see you, Blunders. Olympic Wonder is the heartaches and hopes of the game. Yeah, it is the definition of heartaches and hopes.
What about scrolling underneath the bottom there?
Oh yeah, the Western Mountaineers are absolute ballers.
Number 12 in Division II, baby.
That's the only football going on in this state, right? That's all that matters. That's the only thing that.
Well, that and Colorado Mines is number one in the country. I don't know if you saw that, but Colorado Mines moved up to one. Western's out to 12. So I'll talk about that on top of the mountain. This is the far end of the bench, episode 156. You see, Nico read the title. We have a lot to get into. We're going to talk about some new Olympic sports. We're going to touch on a little bit of the NHL. I have one of the games on in the background while we're recording, and then divisional preview for the NBA, which is going to be interesting because we all know how much I pay attention to this.
One week out from the defending world champions. 1 week out as we recorded this. 1 week out from the world champions being back on the main stage. We had some football's been very, very bad time. Okay. Football, not so good. Not so good right now. But you know what's good is my sport, the sport I work in is Olympic sport, and my Denver Nuggets are back. And I get to watch my Colorado Avalanche. I think it's a pretty good, damn good deal. You take that deal, I'll take that deal. Football sucks. Everything else is back.
I'll take that deal because you texted me and I had the same exact feeling watching that first Avalanche game. And we'll talk more about it when we get to the NHL part of the show, which is later on. It is very nice to just go out there. Like the Bengals this season haven't given me any of that. I know the Broncos haven't given you any of that where you get to just watch your team go out and just dominate and just look really good. And you don't really ever have to worry about anything. The top guys look like studs. Everybody's fitting in right where they need to be. It's nice. It's cozy. That's what I enjoy feeling. That's what I look to. Like teaching, it's a stressful job. I look forward to my constants throughout the week. What are my constants? Colorado Avalanche are going to be good. You've already mentioned it. I already threw up the ticker. The Denver Nuggets are the defending NBA champions. They're world champions until somebody proves it otherwise. And usually it would be, you know, my youth team. So I've been coaching for the Box State Bruins for the last 2 years, 3 years, and we're 40-2 now because on Thursday night we had a game against Broomfield. So, Nico, you'll know how much this meant to me. Yeah, Broomfield was the only other undefeated team for multiple years. We were the only two teams in Colorado that had never gotten any kind of competition. We basically did what you and I used to do with our teams because we used to scrimmage Broomfield and Arvada and all those teams all the time. Well, this is a league-sanctioned game. I told these kids, like, I started playing for Broomfield. My dad and I, we were like Broomfield. That was us. We were the Broomfield Blitz.
How I met you.
Yes, that was how we met. We played in the Faulkner tournament down in Castle Rock, ironically enough, where I teach. And, man, they came out and on Thursday just laid an absolute egg. It was cold. I had kids trying to be the tough guy, like, oh, I don't need sleeves. It's not cold. By the third quarter, when we're not leading by 30 points, they actually have to do something, have a team in front of them that's trying to do something against them. They just totally back down. It started the weekend football. I was not going to watch any football. It was my birthday weekend. That was a shitty start to my birthday weekend. I go, okay, Friday night after school, it's break. What am I going to do? I'm going to turn on the CU game because they're playing Stanford. This should be one of their slam dunks, right? They need to win six games to become bowl eligible. This gets them to five. Like, this is awesome. They're up 29-0 at halftime? What? They look like the best team in the country. Shedeur Sanders is the Heisman frontrunner for a solid 30 minutes of college football. Damn. We turned it off. We turned it off.
Both,
I went to
we
bed.
Turned it off. We both turned it off. It's so bad. It's so bad. And look, we'll jump right to it.
If this was Cal or UCLA, like a team, not Cal, Oregon State, UCLA, a team that you wouldn't necessarily expect to power, but has been good the last couple of years, sure. But Stanford, there was a reason you were up 29-0 on them.
Stanford is the worst team in the Pac-12. It's not even a doubt about that. And you were supposed to be this, that, and the other thing. And look, the good or bad thing about this is that it woke a lot of people up, woke a lot of those players up that thought they were all that in a box of cookies. You're still
You can't buy that Deion hype. What have you done? He has a gold jacket. What have you done sitting in the locker room in Folsom Field right now?
Exactly. And look, I'm not going to say that the world's on fire, but it definitely does not look good because you look at the rest of our schedule. It's going to be very difficult to get the two wins if you can't win games like that. It is going to be – all of a sudden, when we thought, oh, you know what, the background of this schedule looks a lot easier, it all of a sudden looks a lot more difficult. Oregon State, very, very good. UCLA this weekend, ranked team. Arizona, very, 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 very good football team that is playing very, very well against good football teams. They have an absolute dog of a schedule that they have to get the two wins. This should have been the game where, like, you know what, we can scratch this off, get to bowl eligibility in one game, just figure out a win somehow, and then we're good. Now, this team has lost its hype, obviously, and right now Shador –
You got some shit to address.
Shedeur right now did not look good in that second half. He could not get the ball off, and that art probably is on his offensive line, defensive line, because there was no momentum at all, no push at all, no running game that they could not get going at all, and a very ill-advised overtime throw that was easily picked off that went right into the Stanford hands. But I will get on the show. Like I gave CSU their props when I played CU. That receiver, Ayarama or whatever from Stanford, that is one of the best second-half performances I've ever seen in college football. That he,
both
I mean
catches. 200 yards.
I kid you not, they went to him every single possession they had in the fourth quarter and beyond. Right, like that man had one of the most insane catches over the quote unquote best player in college football. I said that. I'll be the one that said that, but I did it.
He Travis Hunter on his head. They didn't keep him on the pitch count like they said, so we should probably
and
talk about that with Travis Hunter.
Especially coming off of a 2-week injury, you don't put the guy out there
liver?
For 100. You don't put the guy out there for 100 some odd snaps after not playing in two straight games.
And you can't expect him not to look like that because he hasn't played. He's out of game shape. Not only are you out of game shape, but your body had to do like the extensive repair on an organ to try and make sure that you're going to be able to live. It's taking a toll. So maybe you get 60 snaps total. So you got 30 offense, 30 defense. You got to make those snaps count. And at Stanford, you should be able to do that. Why are we having him out there for so long? Why are we putting him in this position? Why is Shedeur Sanders tweeting something out, whether it's him or somebody connected to him at halftime? And like, why are these kids all of a sudden buying into the fact that they are the next greatest thing to college football? You have been so far, but guess what that's been predicated on? The work you did in the offseason. And you've had to overcome so many flaws. We've talked about it. CU is by no means a finished product. And all of these offensive linemen, congratulations for being a CU Buffalo for one season, because bye-bye. You're going to have 10 new transfers in there by the time we hit fall break. Not fall break. By winter break, they're going to have 10 new offensive and defensive lineman transfers in there to play a bowl game if they get there. I was able to pull up their schedule, so let's take a look at this. So say we, in the alternate universe, we keep that lead, beat Stanford, so then you have 5 wins. Your next games to finish out the schedule, you have a bye this weekend. Then you go at UCLA, who's now ranked 25th in the country. Very tough game against Chip Kelly. At the Rose Bowl, so you've already kind of chalked that up to going to be a struggle anyways. You're going to host number 12 Oregon State, who after they bounce back from their loss against Washington State, Pac-12 has no bad
DJ,
games.
DJ Uiagalelei, no whatever. Remember?
Uiagalelei.
Whatever the fucking DJ
Uiagalelei. That's one good thing I have. From the announcing days, I was talking with sidetrack. We were talking about like names that we have, and one of the other teachers asked me how to spell something, and I could spell all the names. Like, how do you do that? Well, I was broadcasting, and we would play against Regis University. They had five international players. So I had to learn how to pronounce and spell names fairly quickly to be able to identify them. So I've actually kept that skill.
Yeah, and like I said, he was a top prospect coming into Clemson. And look, he now has a very, very good Oregon State team. And like I said, the rest of the schedule, you play Arizona. Arizona's a very, very good team. Like I said, they don't back down from anybody.
What do they do well, Nico? They run the football, just like how Oregon State runs the football really well. What does he not do ever?
Stop the run at all. And then, never. Look, and then you finish the season playing Utah again, which is your quote unquote rivalry. And then Utah is a very, very tough program every year.
Imagine the story at the end of the season. If they do struggle and they don't get that win, well, they're at four right now, right? So they have to get at least two more.
Two more. I think your best shot would be UCLA. And I think your second best shot is Arizona. Geez.
I think it's Oregon State and Arizona. I assume one of those has to be at home.
If you have five wins going into that Utah game, oh boy, you are in trouble.
That game will have 20 million viewers if bowl eligibility is on the line, because you're gonna have everybody rooting for Deion, you're gonna have everybody rooting against Deion, and you're just gonna have college football fans in general, because I think we should mention this too. College football, all ratings across the board. CU's ratings have been enormous, but ratings across the board have been great, like up 4, 5, sometimes 8%. And you have to think, like, why is this happening? Well, the NIL deal has kept the best players around for the longest. Like, think about Saturday night. What was the best game that we saw all weekend, Nico? Oregon-Washington.
Oregon-Washington.
Those two quarterbacks combined have played 105 NCAA Division I college football games. Michael Penix and Bo Nix. And they put on a damn show. And that's what we're getting in college football right now, because you have this NIL money that's being able to allow the athletes to make the decision to they're staying and they're building their brand. And the college football, like the level, that's what we're not seeing at the NFL, because the NFL has bargained their practice out so much that they struggle at the beginning of the season. College football, this is the highest level that I've ever seen it be played at. Well, and there's been some really good teams, but this is – it's a shame, because think about just another school that's in Colorado, Air Force. They finally cracked the top 25 rankings. They would be in the expanded playoff this year if we were in 12 teams.
Oh, Air Force is a very, very, very good football team this year. And let's not forget the other team in the state, Colorado State, won on a Hail Mary to beat Boise State for the first time in its school's history. CSU is a real, really good team. CU's played much better competition than both played better competition than both Air Force and CSU. Don't get me wrong, but the other two teams in the state have realized, you know what, Deion's putting the state on the map, and look, Air Force has been that team. They have been the best college football team in the state for the past, I want to say, 5, 6, 7 years. It's been them and then everybody else. And like I said, this is just adding fuel to the fire for CSU, for Air Force, for Northern Colorado, for these other schools in the Western, for instance. Like the people, like, you know what, Colorado has great football, and like I said, CU has a build to live up to. Like I said, you have a Hall of Fame coach that is one of the greatest players to ever lace them up. And you have to figure out a way to not have these lapses in judgment at all. Because every time you have a lapse in judgment, you're going to be the brunt end of every single joke, which they rightfully are currently.
I feel like we should end every time we talk about college football playing the rankings game. So let's talk about the rankings. No change at the top. Michigan, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State. Washington bumps up to number 5, so they moved up 2 spots. Oklahoma now at the 6. Penn State the 7. Texas the 8, Oregon the 9, North Carolina the 10, Alabama the 11, and Oregon State the 12. So just with those teams in it currently, you would have Georgia and Michigan, or just Georgia get a bye? Does one or two get a bye in the 12
teams? I don't know. I have no idea how they do.
Let's go. One team gets a bye. So Georgia gets a bye as the number 1 team in the country.
I thought it was the Michigan. First four, but I could be
first
wrong.
Four. Okay, so yeah, first four that means
it's like 5 versus 12, and it's like 18 bracket.
That means that you get Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State as the byes. Then your first matchup would be Washington hosting Oregon State, which would be for the second time that season, possibly third, I think, because they took out their divisions in the Pac-12 for the last season, which could be good, could be bad. Something always weird. So there's something weird to happen, especially when you have a rivalry in that situation. Oklahoma would host Alabama. So Brett Venables would host Nick Saban. Alabama
is not looking good at all. They barely squeaked by Arkansas this past week.
And a college team going on the road with 25-year-old kids is a sketchy situation.
They're going to be very, very lucky to get into a New Year's Six bowl game is all I'm going to say. They have to win the SEC championship. And I think if they win the SEC championship, they're not going to get in the Final Four. I'm convinced of that. Like, they're going to need a lot to happen is all I'm going to say.
Nico, there's only two SEC schools in this scenario.
There's three Pac-12 schools.
Three Pac-12 schools, but I'm saying two SEC schools in this scenario if we were to end the season this year with the 12-team playoff. Penn State would host North Carolina. That would be an interesting matchup. Mac Brown, Penn State deep into the season. You never know what the weather's going to be like. And then Texas would host Oregon. So Quinn Ewers versus Bo Nix. All of those matchups sell money.
Oh, absolutely.
They sell so much money right now. It's a great time to be a college football fan. And if you haven't been a college football fan for up until this point, this is a great time to jump on board because you are getting in when it's actually really good. You don't have to be a fan of five schools to have a shot at a national championship. You can be a fan of basically anywhere, and everybody's going to have a shot, especially this year, notwithstanding. This is the last year where you kind of got to go, oh, man, only four teams. Who are the four teams going to be? It's probably going to be two SEC teams. But then next year it opens wide up.
This is why I think college basketball and the March Madness is the best postseason tournament of all time. It's like you literally there's literally a thought that anybody could beat anybody. And right now, like I said, if you are a school like Grand Canyon University, like myself, where I went to, like you have a real thought that you could make a deep run. You could get to a Sweet 16, play a Gonzaga, play a big time university like UConn's or the Kansas of the world. Little old North Carolina is trying to get to a New Year's Six Bowl that probably no one's going to watch. Let's be honest with ourselves. And look, next year, however, they're going to be in the running for shocking the world with a quarterback in Drake May, which if he came back next year, would be one of the best quarterbacks in college football, and he'd be an absolute stud, right? That just doesn't happen. And now with this wide open, with this salty playoff, like I said, it's so good for the sport. And you're seeing what it's going to look like this year and seeing what the possibilities are, and it just can't get you enough more excited about what the possibilities will be next year and beyond.
I will tell you, the Drake May conversation to myself has gotten kind of interesting because you know who started talking about it is Joel Klatt. And I said on this show quite a bit, he is kind of my go-to opinion for college sports because he's the main Fox Sports analyst. He goes to some of the biggest games. You can say second biggest games because College Game Day was around first, but there's times where I think the Big Noon Kickoff game is better than the ESPN Game Day game. It just kind of depends on the week. He has a very high opinion of Drake May and what his ability going into the league is going to be.
He would look really good in orange and blue is all I'm going to say. All right.
And if Caleb Williams is going to play that I'm going to decide where I go game, Drake May is going to be a possibility to be the first quarterback taken off the board.
A really good second option is all I'm going to say. I would not mind that. I don't know about you, Jimmy. I take that deal. You take that deal. I'll take that deal.
You'll take that deal. I have a decent deal already on the table. This is something that I kind of just thought of. So you've coached. We basically have experience coaching youth high school level here in Colorado. We played all the way into college, various sports. And we've been in the room, been on teams where you've had losses, and it wasn't because the team was better than you. It wasn't because they made more plays than you. It was because you just decided not to show up. And I had that happen to me on Thursday, so it's been sticking in my mind. And I have this question now, and I guess I'll pose it to you, and I kind of want to know what our listeners think, and hopefully Brandon takes this and makes a clip out of it. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Hopefully he's watching this during his fall break. Is it better to coach or play in an effort-based loss? Who has the worst – experience in that situation, because as a coach, if it's an effort-based loss, that means that these guys don't want to play for me. These guys haven't taken that step to, you know, whatever I need them to do at the moment. That's too much in their wheelhouse.
I'm going to be very, very careful with my words here, but I'm going to say it's harder to coach. I will say I think playing in it, there's multitude factors of effort-based loss. It may not be all on you. It may be on the guys around you. You may lose respect for those guys in the locker room. You may think that you played your hardest, but you know what? Like the guy next to me, and that's a harsh way to say it, but sometimes that is the case. Sometimes it is you. Sometimes it's not. But when you're a coach, you feel like, you know what? You're going to play back 100 different scenarios. You'd be like, you know what? I could have done that better. Could have done this better. Could have done that. And that's just the reality of coaching. Is like you have this expectation where you can't control how each player is going to play. But you can control how the pace of the game is. You can control how put the guys in the position correctly to win. If you feel as though you put your team in a position to win, then you will be able to sleep at night. But if you don't, and you feel as though you had a major letdown, then that's something you live with. Plain and simple. Like I said, careful with my words here. Excuses, but some people can see it as, you know what, I didn't play my best this weekend. You know what, I did play my best this weekend. I need the guys around me to help out. You know, this guy missed this tackle, did whatever. But as a coach, you see overhaul, and you're like, you know what, I didn't put these guys in a place to win. And like I said, I go back to the old Atlanta Falcons 28-3 loss. People blame that almost solely on Kyle Shanahan, Dan Quinn, and not as much on Matt Ryan nowadays. Because Matt Ryan was an MVP quarterback, but all everyone talks about now is Dan Quinn can't win the big one. So it's cough, cough with Dallas. Kyle Shanahan.
I talk about it too, because of the Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl blunder, the 10-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. Like, you could go down a list of things. Like, it always goes back to the guy who's calling the plays and supposed to be the leader of the group. And that's the unfortunate part about it, but that's how it goes with team sports in general. If it's an individual sport, it's a completely different thing. But team sports in general, that's just how it goes.
I think it's different, too, with the amount of kids that are on the field at the time, because you coach basketball, I coach football, with 11 guys trying to make sure 11, 12-year-old kids do the same thing on every given play and actually do all the technique and not be lazy and not try and find the shortest way out. That's more difficult than trying to make sure 5 kids do it all at once. And then I'm thinking about it because I have wrestling season coming up at the middle school, and I'm thinking about it, and that's going to be so much easier because it's one person that I have to make sure goes in that direction, because it's an individual / team sport. But if I can get the individuals going in the right direction – like, that's kind of where I agree with you. Like, coaching to me is way harder. I hated coaching my brothers. I kind of hate coaching now. I love coaching at the same time because it gives me the same feeling. But, like, it's my competitiveness, and I want these kids to do better than what I did. And I've tried to put so much effort into the preparation and trying to make sure that they go out and do what they need to do.
Yeah, when you coach like younger kids these days, like it wears more on the coach than it probably does the players. The players can shake it off, go to school the next day, will be just fine. The coach thinks about it until the next practice, thinks about it until the next thing, because that's,
like I said, still thinking about it. It's all I've been thinking about.
It's a getaway from the shitty stuff we have to deal with every day. And to think about, like, oh, I can do this better, I can do that better, that's something that just weighs on the coach's mind, unfortunately. When it comes to the professional level, when it comes to the collegiate level, I think that's a little different. When it comes to little experience, sports, I think that may be where it differs.
Yeah, and I think you can put high school sports in there too, because you don't get paid. You don't get paid to be able to support yourself, and it is like the high school athletes do the same thing. We had a double duel last year for one of the high school meets, and the kid that I've been working with in the same night made me the proudest I've ever been of him by winning a match that I didn't expect him to win in the beginning. And then he lost a match that he just rolled over onto his back. I was like, I'm happy with you, and I hate you all at the same time, because I can't do anything more for you. It's all up to you now. I've given you the reins. I've given you the head coach that I coach with likes to say this. I've given you the answers to the test. Are you going to use them, or are you're going to be lazy and struggle and bang your head up against the wall? Because that's what we did on Thursday. And Nico, I'm sure that this is my mental instability coming out, and I should probably sign up for put in whatever mental health provider wants to start sponsoring the show. I'm going to say it that way and talk to somebody about it. But it's necessary. I feel like it's an interesting conversation for us to have, because we do have that experience like playing, coaching, like Logan would, he would let us know straight up that it was going to be fixed when there was an effort-based loss. Because we very rarely lost a game at Cherry Creek High School, other than the games that I think we lost in the playoffs, where a team wasn't really better than us. It was something that we did that forced that situation, and he dealt with it in certain ways. And you're right. You can't deal with it in the way that it was dealt with us in the kids nowadays. Like, I can't be Ken Markiel. I can't be Jim Pilato. I can't be Doc Courts. I can't be those guys.
Yeah, it definitely is a different change of pace. I'll tell you what. Like I said, it's beyond both sides now. It definitely is. It's different. It's a different phenomenon that makes you think about mostly different things.
You're wearing your hat, so you want to. Well, first off, wrestling is my favorite Olympic sport. I will say that now. I cannot wait for the 2028 games because the team that we had, I think they won 8 out of 10 possible gold medals at the World Championships. So the USA Olympic wrestling team is looking nice. But, Nico, you have news about maybe another sport that's being added into?
Let me make sure I get all these right, because we'll talk about my sport here in a second. But all the sports that were added to the LA 28, which, yes, you heard that correctly, the Los Angeles will host the 2028 Olympics.
I will be.
I'll just point that out right now. So it doesn't matter how, but I will be there for.
I have that time off. Let's try and make it. Let's put it together, because let's help each other.
That's all I'm going to say is I will be there, and we'll figure something out going down. We have 5 years till then, but either way, it's here. I know we'll both be over 30 years old. Just think about that for a
minute. Never mind. We might have a family.
I was also told that I'd be 30 years old in 2028. It's like, oh, fuck, that is fucking crazy. I know. How do you feel old now, Jimmy? Yeah, that's why.
I just have to pick my new insurance, and I just had to get a new ID card.
Oh yeah, it sucks. I had to do that last month or 2 months ago, whatever it was. Yeah, it's not necessarily the most fun thing in the world, being adult.
But yeah, I have to pick my health insurance on Monday. Great.
Yeah. Very, very exciting stuff as an adult now. But going back, so 28, the following sports will be added. We can have this conversation after we talk about my sport, but flag football will be an Olympic sport. Cricket.
Shout out Arvada West High School, by the way, because they won the first ever girls flag football state championship here in Colorado.
And they beat Creek, and they beat my little cousin. Thank you very much. I was there for that, and that fucking sucked. That's all I'm gonna say. So I have a little disdain for that. I know you coached there.
I just needed to throw that in because they were the first one, and I happen to know that because.
This girl on their team, Jimmy, I swear, looks like fucking Megatron, okay? The girl's like 6'3", taller than me, jacked out of her mind. I'm like, I'm sorry, we're going to beat this girl? And look, my cousin's like, she had a couple picks, a couple touchdowns, she was balling. And I was like, oh, we're not going to beat this team. This girl, damn Peyton Manning, just throwing lobs to Megatron out there and just getting touchdowns every time she wanted. So it was unfortunate, but she made it to the championship and lost our battle less, yeah. So flag football has been added. Cricket. Another sport, obviously not a sport here in the States that's big, but over in India, China, and over that side of the world, it's big sport, so that's very exciting. Then we have squash, obviously indoor sport, squash. We have baseball, softball, pretty big. Baseball, obviously the World Baseball Classic this past spring was very, very exciting to watch, so that should be very fun in 28. Then obviously you have the biggest sport of this podcast the past couple of months and the biggest sport in my life currently, and that's lacrosse. Like I said, lacrosse has not been in the Olympics since 1905, I believe. It might have been 1906. I'm not sure the exact date, but it's been since the 1900s, since it was an Olympic sport. And at that point, no eyes was watching. It was basically, if you were in attendance, you were watching it. No one else. The amount of eyes, the amount of trash in this sport is going to get, being on the Olympic stage, is absolutely massive. We're talking women. We're talking men. The men's and women's across the United States in general, especially, is top of the world. PLL in general, we're going to see a new revelation of building this brand and building the sport to a point where I'll be happy to see it, and others will be very, very excited to see it as well. Like I said, this opens the opportunities so massively. Obviously,
interesting question. I not to derail you completely, but with the PLL success, with this becoming an Olympic sport, and I'm thinking about the parallel with lacrosse is hockey. Do you think that we start seeing, or is there already different professional leagues in the different countries, like a Canadian professional lacrosse league, a Swedish league?
To counter your point, there is a Canadian indoor league.
Okay.
There's other indoor leagues across the world. I would say
And I could be ignorant to it. I'm not familiar, but I would think that makes a lot of sense, because then you'd have the same kind of pipeline where if you're not making it in the U.S., you go play juniors in Canada, or you go international and play in. If you can play American football in Finland, I'm sure you can play professional lacrosse somewhere in Europe, right?
Like I said, look, the game has grown so much, and Paul, and when I say Paul Rabel. Paul Rabel, Mike Rabel, Rachel DeCheco, obviously my boss, Rachel, have put it so perfectly. It's like their model is the 1982 Dream Team. People forget when they saw these professional athletes, when they saw Michael Jordan, when they saw Charles Barkley, when they saw Larry Bird, Magic Johnson walking the streets among them and seeing, you know what is this Olympic sport? What can it be? And you bring the game to the world and bring this diversity to the game. It just increases it so, so much more. Like I said, when the PLL went to, I believe it was Japan back in March or April of this year, like that was a big, big step. It's a big, big step in growing a sport, because like I said, the more eyes, the more diverse this game becomes, and the better these other countries become, it's going to grow the game even much more. And like I said, with the PLL, and look, everything's pointing to the Olympic lacrosse being sixes, which weirdly enough, not really enough, but funny enough, is something that the Redwoods will be playing in, sixes lacrosse, come this upcoming beginning of next year. I'm not sure when it'll be, like I said, but it'll be coming up. The championship series will be sixes, and that's more than likely what you'll see at the Olympic stage. Very quick, fast-paced, up and down, high-scoring games. And that is going to be very, very entertaining to the eye, like I said. So the possibilities are endless. I love the traditional game. I love the 10-on-10. I love the big field game. But I get it that it's very, very difficult sometimes to figure out what's going on when you're playing on the size of a football field and the ball is the size of a hockey puck and less smaller than that. Okay, I realize how tough it is. So it's going to be great for the game. It's so damn exciting. It's something that I've been – obviously someone who's worked in lacrosse and worked in the worked for the USOC, I could not be more thrilled. And like I said, this is such a big moment for the sport, big moment in my career too, because the possibilities are endless for me. What that may look like at 28, like it's so big, and I could not be more excited. Like I said, Canada versus U.S. this past spring/summer at the World Games was very, very exciting. Put that in sexist format, put that with Brendan O'Neill, Colin Schellenberger and company on the roster, and all these young guys in 28, things are going to be endless. So I'm very, very, very ecstatic, and I cannot wait. Like I said, it's going to be weird not having it next year in 24 when the games are in Paris, but 28 comes around, lacrosse is going to be absolutely staple to watch.
I think it's going to be the lacrosse, and then talking about just the other new ones. It's really, I didn't realize that cricket was getting integrated. It's interesting because the field that my little guys practice at, they actually have like cricket practices at. So I see the guys bowling. I see the guys with a big wooden bat. But seeing softball and baseball being added.
Awesome. That's great too.
It's why hadn't that been an Olympic sport sooner? Because everybody plays it. Everybody plays a version of these. And that's going to be just more eyeballs. And now, like, I'm not as cool as I need it. Paris is going to be very cool. But I want to go on a European trip aside from an Olympic trip. If I want to go to an Olympic trip, it has to be somewhere in the U.S. And 2028 in Los Angeles, we'll see where I'm at career-wise. We'll see where we're at podcast-wise with this. Because, goddamn, that would be 8 years of podcasting. That's about when podcasts start taking off. So all of our initial bench warmers, hopefully you guys are along for the ride. I'm very interested, and it's awesome that they're actually, instead of taking away sports, because I remember when I was pissed off at the OC for, you cannot take out wrestling. You cannot. That's the name of the wrestling club that I started at the middle school is the Olympian Wrestling Club, club because it's the oldest, most ancient form of combat. Absolutely. That goes back to the initial Olympics. You cannot take that out. And now adding in sports, flag football it's too, I'm super
proud. Flag football is the one where obviously the biggest discussion has come about is because obviously the actual American football.
It's entertaining.
And look, it is entertaining. I will say that. And it is a little weird because obviously, look, there's going to have to be 75 or at least 50 countries that will have to field a flag football team. Let's not forget about that. So it's going to be very, very raw.
Some of those international teams by that time, we might be surprised. You may be surprised.
And it's unfortunate because obviously the NFL has gotten so big and the NFL is the biggest sport in America. It's obviously not the biggest sport in the world. But like I said, I would love to see the NFL or American football, as we want to call it, is get to that point. It's going to be a long ways to go, in my opinion. But it's flag football is definitely an interesting sport to be added, is all I'm going to say. But then again, you have the skateboarding of the world. You have all these different things. You have – I'm not saying these sports aren't sports, but equestrian's there. There's a lot of different there's something for everybody. There's archery. There's something for everybody. If you don't want to just sit there, watch basketball, sit there, watch swimming, sit there, watch wrestling, there's a sport for everybody. And flag football being added, like I said, I have all kudos in the world being added, but it definitely is an interesting one to think about when you think about how big American football is as opposed to flag football.
So that's obviously the 2028 Olympics, with it being in the U.S., it's a big deal because I don't think it's happened since Atlanta. Well, summer games specifically. I know that we've had the winter games here in Salt Lake and everything like that, but that's going to be interesting moving forward. With the NHL, like I said, I have the Tampa Bay game on now currently. We're trying to get the podcast. We're recording this on Tuesday. We're trying to get it done in enough time so that we don't have to be recording while the Avs are on the ice. But so far, when the Avs have been on the ice, it's been nothing but good things. Two games on the season, so what can you really take from that? They're 2-0.
I can take that. I took 60 shots to beat good old San Jose, and finally one in at the end of the game.
Darren tried to pull that shit too on Sunday night. It doesn't matter, right?
Getting dominated in every aspect of the game, and you almost won that game. Good for you,
Nico. We have so many new guys in the lineup right now. Like, all we have to do. You can't dwell on the bad because there's going to be a really high amount of bad.
We dominated every aspect of the game. I'm saying that on the flip side. We should have absolutely
won that game. I thought that you were saying that San Jose.
No, we did. You look at the statistics. It took 60 shots on net, so they're 20 to finally net one. We dominated every aspect of the game, and look, that's a great game, and that's a game that you look upon. You're like, you know what? It's a game that. When in doubt, like if everything's the puck's just not finding the back of the net, so be it. You'll find it eventually because that's how talented this team is. This team, look, I am absolutely in love with everything about this team. Georgiev has been absolutely incredible so far. Ross Colton looks like he's going to be our new favorite player on this podcast. You have
third line grinder, baby.
Thomas Tatar is absolutely a masterpiece. And let's not forget about Jonathan Drouin, the guy who everybody wrote off, who has stepped into the first line and just produced after produced. And yeah, he's with his old buddy Nathan
McKinnon.
That guy
stepped in this situation where he's like, I got to play with McKinnon.
Two of the best players in the world, two of the top 10 best players in the world.
I pass it right, I pass it left, and those two guys score. I'm cool. I'll play on this role.
I'll get my assists. I'll be fine here. I don't care. I'll be happy.
You get the nobody's home tap in goals where the goaltender's like chasing McKinnon around into the corner and he just slides it across to you and there's nobody standing between you and the net. That's the crazy thing that's bound to happen is that it is like so new with the group as of this moment. I will say Georgiev, who knew that guy just had to play. I don't know what goalies go through weird mental streaks, but that guy just loves to play. So he needs to play majority of the games. And right now, not having Francouz at the moment, and I'm knocking on all the wood that I can right now, and I'm saying this on Tuesday night, and then as we watch the game, I'm sure that something catastrophic is going to happen. But as long as we don't have Frankie right now, it's his net. He wants to do that.
He will.
So I'm good with Georgiev playing a majority of the games right now.
it's very, very important to give George up everything and just to make sure he is fully ready and all the way in. And like I said, will you believe in a guy saying he's the number one? That's huge. That's absolutely massive for morale. And look, let's not forget, Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland made the deal of the century again. You have the two best – do you have the best defensive hockey pair in the league now together for the next 7 years?
So – that was the big – now the big stress shifts back to Landeskog. Now I have to focus my attention back to Landeskog because seven signed for seven, everybody. Devontae signed for 7 years.
Devontae is getting paid less than Seth Jones, who's fucking a goddamn crumple of himself. You look at Dumoulin from Pittsburgh is getting paid more. The defensive market right now getting paid that. Everyone's like, you know what? This is a market. That's a deal. It's a great deal. When Devontae said it, he was like, no, it's a great deal for myself. I get to stay with the best player in hockey, one of the best players in hockey. I get to be line mates with him. I get to play in a city where I can grow up my kids and be a part of a winning culture for the next 7 years.
Shout out Cherry Hill Village, baby.
Goddamn, what a fucking deal, Joe and Chris. Goddamn. Like I said, this is why this faith and like I said, Kroenke does some dumb shit when it comes to letting us watch our teams. But my God, he has figured out the right people to make managing decisions because they don't do a fucking thing outside of say you Joe Sakic, Chris McFarland, do that. Calvin Booth, Tim Connelly at one time, do whatever the fuck you want. Build a good winning franchise, and that's exactly what they've done. And like I said, it's the first two games of the season, but being able to do that with Taze, you don't have to worry about that all into the offseason. You have this thought that your core will be around. You just, like I said, it's when you win a championship, it is all about retool. You are not going to get much better than when you win a championship. Plain and simple. That may be the best team you and I will ever see the Avs play, Jimmy, when we won the Stanley Cup. This past Nuggets team may be the best team that I will ever see the Nuggets ever be. It is about retooling and getting back to where you are a damn good team, where you can your championship mentality can kick back in, where you can beat.
You just got to make it to the dance, baby. You just got to make it to the dance.
And win when it matters. Plain and simple. And like I said, I love what this team's done so far. And like I said, getting Devontae's back locked up for a long time is absolutely massive.
The only other thing that I want to talk about right now, I'm sure it's a game you have on too, Buffalo-Tampa. Is that the game that you're watching?
I'm watching baseball currently, but yeah, you're Tampa Bay Lightning falling to 1-3 on the season.
Well, it's still not even the end of the second. It's still not even the end of the second period, but I will say, Buffalo is what we said. I'm not putting too much stock into the first two games of the season when we know that Vasilevsky's coming back. I get it. I said that they were going to be able to weather the storm. This is different than weathering the storm. Buffalo, I've heard nothing but amazing things. And you know who they're talking about? And it makes me really sad, but they're talking about the Condor. And they're saying that the Condor came into Buffalo's dressing room and he's got all of that young. They had so many. It's just a stable of stallions. It's a stable of stallions up there in Buffalo. Now he's teaching them how to be professional hockey players, too. So Buffalo's a damn good team. I'm not putting any stock into this right now.
I know Buffalo's a very, very good team, but I know what a player Jonas Johansson is. That's the only reason why I don't think this team will be a top two team.
Nico, I know what I'm talking about. All right. That's enough hockey. Hold on. Before we put that one up, I have to put this one up.
Yeah. Just make sure. Make sure.
I'll leave it here. So subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow us at FEOTB Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Take a screenshot of this. Drink two every time that you see the Nuggets are still world champions. but we are talking about – we're doing our division preview. Division by division of the – well, not division by division, really. We're going to do Eastern Conference, Western Conference. We're going to talk about some predictions, and obviously we're talking about the Denver Nuggets who are
world
trying
champion.
To defend their championship.
Every time we say Denver Nuggets, it's going to be – you got to make sure you preface world champion Denver Nuggets. That's all I'm going to say.
We'll talk
about the world champion Denver
Nuggets. I'm just going to leave this here. We're talking about basketball, but I'm just going to leave this here.
Exactly. Anytime anyone ever wants to talk about the Nuggets and Lakers fans specifically, just make sure you say NBA/world champion Denver Nuggets because that's what we are. So you want to keep our name in your mouth, then make sure you say it correctly.
We're going to start in the Eastern Conference because I don't I don't know what I want you to save your Western Conference takes and your Lakers takes for the end, because I'm a good producer and a good director like that. I like to stir the pot. Eastern Conference. Let's look. I don't give a shit about the preseason rankings as of currently. Let's look at last season's rankings. We had Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, Cleveland, New York, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Miami, Chicago, Toronto, as in the play-in / playoff tournament. Out of those teams, Milwaukee had the huge Damian Lillard trade. Boston's been making a couple moves. I feel like Philadelphia is the team that everybody's looking at and trying to figure out where they're going. But what is the main storyline for you going into this upcoming season for the Eastern Conference? Is it still Miami's kind of been sitting right around there? Whose conference is this to lose, or is it more of a stagnant race that we're going to have to see how it plays out throughout the regular season?
I'll still say it. This is still Boston's conference to lose, in my opinion. Like I said, I've heard a lot of great things out of Boston's camp. You had Kristaps Porzingis, and you had probably the biggest offseason addition in the Eastern Conference outside of Dame and Jrue Holiday. And Boston should be a team that is the team to beat. Plain and simple. Tatum, Jaylen Brown, it's time for you to take that next step. If it isn't, then it's time to move on from one of you. And more than likely, I'm looking at Jaylen Brown. Plain and simple. Because that duo doesn't look like he'll be able to win anything if you aren't able to get over the hump. Like I said, say what you want about Miami and that Heat culture. Because, look, it's great. Heat culture is great. Miami Heat have been two out of the last three NBA finals. Three of the last four conference finals. That is a team every single offseason that says we're just grittier, we're tougher than you. Boston right now is not a tough team. And you add Kristaps, you add Jrue Holiday, you lose Marcus Smart, obviously. I think that will change big time. It is Boston's conference to lose. But the Milwaukee Bucks will be the best team in this conference. I tweeted this out, I want to say, a couple weeks back of my predictions for the offseason. I'll try to find the tweet somewhere where I gave my full predictions. But I think Boston will have the best record in basketball. I really do. I think that they're going to be a very, very good regular season team because of their depth and everything that they got outside. I think Boston's the best regular season team in the conference. I think Milwaukee is the team to beat in the East, though. Milwaukee, obviously, with Dame, you still have Middleton. That team is still so, so damn good. And obviously, losing Jrue will hurt their defense massively. But I think that Dame will figure it out. And I think Giannis, obviously, the staple. He's still one of the two best players in the world, and I will stand on that. And then with Jokic being the first one and Giannis being two, they are that good. They are obviously that good.
I'm going to give you two teams that are kind of on the same level, or at least I think that their fan bases are expecting the same thing going into the season. Between Cleveland and Chicago, who's going to be the team that was kind of middling last season, and who's going to take the next step forward? Because Love is going into, I believe he's going into the season with Chicago, and you had the decent season going until the injury bug hit last year. And then obviously Cleveland, we had higher hopes for them coming out of the first round of the playoffs, and they didn't live up to those expectations. But between those two teams, who do you think comes out of the Midwest and actually poses a threat in the Eastern Conference?
Look, this is a massive year for both teams because both teams are in the middle of, do we take that next step? And I'll throw New York into this mix as well. I'll throw New York, Cleveland, and what was the third team? Sorry, New York, Cleveland, Chicago. And Chicago, where Chicago – look, Lonzo will still not be around. LaVine and DeRozan, if they don't get off to a good start, it could be time to shop those players and take that and move on and build around and see what you got out of Kobe White, see what you got out of Patrick Williams, and maybe time to try to trade those guys off and see what you got out of your young guys. Because like I said, this team's not getting any younger, and I don't know if DeRozan being your number two this late in his career, look, he's a very, very good player. Don't get me wrong, very good player. I don't think him being the number two or number one guy on a good team is going to win you a championship. So that's where things will get interesting for the Bulls. As for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Donovan Mitchell is an unrestricted free agent this offseason. You better figure it out.
How did you get him there in the first place? That's what I want to know.
You traded He's traded every single aspect of everything and try to keep to bring him into Utah. Utah obviously is a much deeper team now because of it. But you better hope that you win some ball games this year because
bring back LeBron. Bring back LeBron to play with Spider. And draft Bronny. That's how the script goes. I figured it out.
Bronny can't be drafted till next year, not this year, but next year.
So now you're throwing in the real world, and that just fucks everything up.
I know. But I look, Cleveland better figure it out. Like I said, I love Mobley's game. I love Jared Allen's game. I think they're a very, very good young team. But it's time now for these guys to take that next step. I'm looking at Garland as well. Like I said, they should be a top three team in the East, in my opinion, with the depth and the good strength that they have across the board. When it comes to the Knicks, Brunson and Julius Randle, are they the 1-2 punch? Are they going to be the 1-2 punch to lead you to the promised land? Or are you going to go try to take a big swing on a big fish? Cough, cough, Joel Embiid. Cough, cough, the Zach Levines in the world, the DeMar DeRozans. We'll see, because I think the Knicks will be a hot topic about the trade market for Embiid, the trade market for these other guys, big names, because they'll be a very solid team, middle of the road, but they won't be able to take the next step. They won't be able to compete with the Milwaukee's, Boston's of the world. But they'll be middle of the pack and be on that market. When it comes to Philadelphia, do I need to make my comments known? James Harden is still trying to find a trade. He's still trying to go to the Clippers. He's still trying to get out of there. And this team right now with Tyrese Maxey as the number two is not hosting a playoff series in the playoffs. I'll say it. They're a fifth seed at best, and that is because Embiid is falling apart in the postseason, falling apart in the at the end run of the regular season. Without James Harden, this team doesn't win the first round series last year, plain and simple. So we'll see what the Philadelphia 76ers are. I obviously have no faith in them at all. And I think, like I said, this is a make or break of the year for them. Because Embiid will start calling and being like, you know what, maybe it's time for me to move on. This team is incapable of building people around him. And all of it, and funny enough, you look at the people he had around him, Jimmy. Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, James Harden, all these guys, all stars. Every single one of them, all stars. And you cannot win, cannot even get to the Eastern Conference Finals? That's the biggest question, right? Jokic just played with how many all stars in his career, Jimmy? One.
One?
Yeah. DeMarcus Cousins, who was his third-string center. He's played with one all-star. Actually, I take it back. Sorry, two. Paul Millsap was also an all-star.
Murray hasn't been an all-star yet?
Murray has never been an all-star.
Nico, the NBA, it doesn't make sense. The NBA doesn't exist in reality.
Ben Simmons, an all-star. Jimmy Butler, an all-star. James Harden, an all-star. All these all-stars. Tobias Harris was a fringe all-star as well. All these all-starters and all-stars for the Sixers. And Embiid, still. Still processing.
You're making Rocky cry, man. He's hearing what you're saying about Philly.
Rocky can enjoy the Phillies. We don't need to worry about the Sixers.
We're going to get to the Phillies. Before we move from the East Conference, what's going on with Atlanta? Because Trae Young was interviewed by Pat McAfee during the Oklahoma game. And obviously the Oklahoma ties, that's where I remember Trae Young from. So I picked Oklahoma in a couple games, and when I was watching the games walking around campus in college I got to get the ticker going before I mention it. As I was walking around the Western Colorado University, who happens to be number 12 in the NCAA Division II football rankings campus, I was like, come on, Trey, hit another 40-footer for me. Is he going to get traded? Are they going to do something to get him a team around him?
The Hawks are another thing that is a ticking time bomb. They got rid of John Collins, who was arguably their second best player, for literally dirt scrap, and sent him to Utah. They said, you know what, we're done with this John Collins, Clint Capella, whatever we thought it was going to be. DeJounte Murray is the number two guy on that team right now. Atlanta's a team that they better figure it out. Or like I said, similar to Philadelphia, if they're not a top. Also, if they're a playoff team and not in the play-in tournament, then that'll be a successful season. That'll be putting things in the right direction. If they're a play-in team, they're a 7-10 team in the playoffs, or hell, missing the playoffs, then things are in trouble for them. Plain and simple. And I'll say one sleeper team, and I think that they're going to. I think this is a team that could possibly be not in the play-in tournament. That I think is going to be a very, very good team, tough team every single week. Indiana Pacers. I believe that this Pacers team, obviously adding Brucey B, is going to be a massive addition for them. I think Tyrese Halliburton is going to take that next step. You had a guy in Benedict Mathurin, who was arguably Rookie of the Year last year. Miles Turner, another year. Obviously, I'm speaking gibberish to Jimmy right now. But you have a lot. you have a lot of very good young players in Indiana, and I think Haliburton takes the next step, and I think Brucey B adds a lot to this team. So I'm excited to see what this Pacers team looks like this year.
Well, yeah, you're not wrong with my feelings, but I do think that it's important. The Eastern Conference, it's basically they're having to gear themselves up to figure out the Western Conference and Nikola Jokic. So we've talked about the Eastern Conference. Looking at Western Conference from last year, playoff teams, Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, L.A., Golden State, the teams that ended up making the play-in tournament, the Lakers, who the Nuggets obviously ended up knocking off in the Western Conference Finals, the Timberwolves, who the Nuggets beat in the first round, Oklahoma City and New Orleans were the other two teams in the play-in tournament. So a little bit disappointing. Let's talk about the disappointments first in the Western Conference, because we started off at the top in the East. So the disappointments in the Western Conference, I would say, well, I don't know, Nico, you've obviously seen it. If I've seen it, I know that you've seen it. Tell me about Victor Wembanyama, and why is he the best basketball player to have ever been created in a lab and sent here from France? Because, oh my God, if preseason highlights were a thing, I would write a book about how Victor Wembanyama is the best basketball player ever.
Oh my God, dude, I'm so thankful the Nuggets won their championship when they did. This guy is Giannis, but like a different version.
Giannis plus Kevin Durant.
Plus Kevin Durant to add in a little Tim Duncan with a little Dennis Rodman rebound.
Not Timmy D.
This guy is, oh man, this, he's going to be a problem. I'll say it on record. I think that the Spurs get into the play-in tournament. I think it'll be as a 10 seed, and maybe, but I think they will be fighting at the end of the year to be a play-in tournament. That's how highly I think of Wembanyama. If the key word is if he stays healthy. That's the thing. Is look, the game is much tougher. It's much more difficult on the legs playing these bigger, stronger guys. But what I've seen out of Wembanyama so far this summer, and this fall, and obviously summer league and the preseason games thus far, shows that he's gotten stronger, and shows it doesn't matter the size of the guy. You saw the highlight of Thomas Bryant getting dunked on. He's been
playing pro basketball for 5 years.
He is going to be one of the biggest problems in the West for many, many years to come, is all I'm going to say. And like I said, the Spurs and Popovich was thinking about retiring. Let's not forget about that. He sees this freaking nature.
They retired for last in the Western Conference.
This 7'5" motherfucker that from France and a European god looks like, and all of a sudden pops like, you know what? I think I can chase down Phil for that championship. Those 11 around. Championships. Like, I can stick I'll around and contend for it. Yeah, Wembanyama is all about the box cookies. But to San Antonio will be a very entertaining team to watch this year. I it's weird saying that. First time since Timmy D and Tony Parker retired, but they'll be a very, very entertaining team to watch.
What about Portland? Now that they've given up Dame, are they going to be able to use the assets that they've got? Or is it going to be a year before we see any kind of return on investment? How is Portland going to rebound from trading their guy?
I think Portland takes a step back. I think they won't be a playoff team. I will say that. They won't be a playoff team. But I will go on a record saying that I love the pieces they got. I really do love what they got in return. I think Ayton needed to get out of Phoenix. And I think he being possibly a number one, number two guy in Portland, I think can open his game up a lot. Obviously, you have Scoot Henderson, a guy who was very, very highly touted. If Wembanyama wasn't in the draft, Scoot Henderson would have been the surefire number one pick. He's going to be a very, very good, exciting talent. They still have Jeremy Grant. You add Malcolm Brogdon. You add in Time Lord Robert Williams. This team all of a sudden is going to be very, very frisky, in my opinion. They'll be very, very frisky. They're not going to be – Chauncey Billups is going to have that team playing tough, good, hard basketball, playing simple. I'm excited to see what that team will do. Do I think they're going to do anything? Absolutely not. I don't think they're as good as the rest of the teams in the West. But I am excited to see what these guys and what Ayton and what the possibility of Scoot Henderson, Jeremy Grant can do for Portland going forward after losing your, obviously, franchise centerpiece.
Let's talk about the top now. I don't know if we have to worry about – I think the play-in teams are probably going to stay the play-in teams. I don't know if you think Minnesota is going to make it into the top six. But for Denver, who is their biggest threat? Because they're obviously the defending conference champions, the defending world champions. Hold on. I like to make fun of myself too much. I'll leave that up on the screen for another second. There we go. The Nuggets are still the world champion Denver Nuggets. Who is the world champion Denver Nuggets' biggest threat coming up this season? Because we'll talk about the Denver Nuggets like ESPN and Fox talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Who do the Nuggets have to contend with this year for the NBA?
Who's going to be the biggest test to the world champions is a better way to put that.
And that is my question.
And I will say it's the team that gave us the biggest test the whole entire playoffs. And it's the let me get that.
Nico, it looks like you're choking a little bit.
Oh, sorry. The Phoenix Suns will be the best of them.
You got over your choking.
Los Angeles losers. That bum ass franchise. No, it'll be the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns, obviously, look, I love what they did in adding Nurkic. I'm a Nurkic hater. I will say that. Jokic eats him alive every single postseason. And we have Suns fans losing their mind over a preseason game and Nurkic getting a dunk over Jokic. I thought that was a good chuckle on NBA Twitter this past week. The Suns will be the second best team. I Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are all that. And Bradley Beal is a bona fide all-star. How they are going to manage without a point guard and Devin Booker taking over the point guard roles, I think that'll take some time. I think that will get this team to a point where it's going to have to figure out its identity. It's obviously going to turn into four or five guys bringing up the ball up the court. Similar to what the Nuggets do. We'll see. The Phoenix, by far and away, is the second best team in this conference. I think there is zero doubt about that. I think the difference between first and second and third through everybody else is about the same. I think first and second, there's a massive – I think Phoenix is very, very close with Denver. When it comes to third place and I would say eighth place, I think that's where things get very interesting.
Does Sacramento repeat their top three performance?
I'm going to say no. I have a different team as my four seed, which I'll get to here in a moment. I have the Clippers back at three. I think the Clippers getting a fully healthy Kawhi back is going to help them a lot. Kawhi was not healthy at all last year and didn't even play in the playoffs. I think with him and PG, they'll be a very, very good team. I have them third, contending at number two. Four seed, this is the shocker. I'm going to have the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think Anthony Edwards is going to be that guy. I think at some point they're going to have a conversation about trading Cat and getting possibly another guard to pair with him. And that's where you could call and possibly call about Trae Young, could possibly call about Jalen Brunson if the Knicks aren't going well. Things, there's different possibilities. But I love what Anthony Edwards brings to the table. And I think Rudy Gobert over there and the Minnesota Timberwolves can figure it out. Teams I have taken steps back. I have the Kings taking a step back. I don't believe in them still. Look, they're a very good team. I love seeing what they're doing. See what they did last year, getting a playoff win under the belt, but still lost the Golden State Warriors. So losses of the three seed. So I don't believe in them. Memphis Grizzlies, I went out on a limb and tweeted this out. I think the Memphis Grizzlies are a playing team that misses the playoffs. I think John Morant's stuff off the court and what they're dealing with, I think it's just going to be way too much. I think Memphis right now, I do not believe in them. They're going to have to rely heavily on Derrick Rose and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Marcus Smart now add to their team to carry them through these 20-some-odd games that John Morant's out for now. So we'll see what they look like, but I think they take a step back. Lakers, I think, will be a team that will be a six-seed/fringe play-in tournament team. I still don't believe in them. They won't ever be healthy. The biggest conversation here is we have some friends that are Golden State Warriors fans, and all the conversation out of San Francisco has been next offseason. Because Klay Thompson's contract talks have died, absolutely died. He is an unrestricted free agent offseason. Everyone says it doesn't matter. Klay Thompson's going to come back. I don't know, man. I don't know. And Steve Kerr is a great coach. Don't get me wrong. They'll win playoff games, no doubt about that, because of what they got. But this is a big year. Big year for Jonathan Kuminga. Big year for Kevon Looney. Big year for Andrew Wiggins to see if this team can still be a contender, a major, major contender with how good the West has gotten, in my opinion.
The Western Conference looks like it's going to be a gauntlet, kind of like how people have seen the Eastern Conference so far. That's your NBA preview, obviously, next week. By next week, we record the 24th, don't we? So the night that the banner goes up.
So the night the banner goes up. We'll be recording the day after the banner goes up, is all I'm going to say. Because I will be in attendance when that banner goes up, is all I'm going to say. So I could not be more excited. Like I said, this is the last episode you will see without a banner up in Ball Arena. I was at the preseason game this past Sunday. Yeah, I was at a basketball preseason game while Sunday Night Football was going on. That was a shitty-ass game, too. So I'm glad I watched the Sunday Night Basketball game against the Bulls. But, yeah, I was looking up in the rafters. I was like, no, where's that banner going to be? And I saw the spot, and, ooh, baby, it's getting real. So I cannot wait to see that banner lifted up into the rafters with those three Stanley Cup championships as well, right next to it. So I'm very, very excited.
That is coming up this week. Also starting this week, I said it by the time we recorded our next episode when we were on episode 155, we were going to have the championship series set, and they are set. And not only are they set, let's take a look here. So just an update, the Rangers beat the Orioles. They won their five-game series 3-0. The Astros beat the Twins 3-1 in their five-game series. So it's the Rangers and the Astros in the ALCS. And the Rangers currently lead by 2 games in that series. Then in the National League, Arizona swept Milwaukee. They swept Los Angeles. They are in the NLCS currently against Philadelphia. Philadelphia beat the Miami and Atlanta. Atlanta was looked at as one of the top teams ever to play baseball. And as of current standing, in the top of the fifth, Philadelphia currently holds a 2-run lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks. But Arizona is the Cinderella team of the entire playoff bracket. So we have the championship series set. Let's start with the NL because we have a team out of the NL West, which is the division that the Rockies are currently in, not going to be in moving forward once they make their shifts. But with the Diamondbacks, with the Phillies, is this insurmountable now? Has the pumpkin, the proverbial pumpkin, happened to Arizona because they had 2 upset wins so far? Now Philadelphia just seems to have taken a stranglehold. And if they win tonight, it's hard for me to say Philly can't end this in 5.
I don't think they're going to. Yeah, I think they ended 5. I think the Arizona wins one at home. But look, Philadelphia just seems like an absolute buzzsaw. I we'll talk about the AL here in a second, but I think my two teams right now are the Rangers and Phillies that I bet on every single day and won money on. Yes, the degenerate is back, baby, is all I'm going to say. But yeah, betting on baseball into the postseason, I'm enjoying it. And the Phillies have won me a lot of money, is all I'm going to say. And so has the Rangers. But this Phillies team playing at home, undefeated at home, they're pitching unreal right now. Right now, they have the hottest lineup in baseball. You cannot pitch to Trey Turner. You cannot pitch to Bryce Harper. You can't pitch to
Castellanos.
And you can't piss the next Castellanos because, we don't want to get political on the show, but there's things going on in the world right now, and he's very, very hot, is all I'm going to say. And look, this lineup top to bottom is so, so damn good. So good. So that's why I believe in Philly right now. And look, the Diamondbacks are a great story. I feel bad for them, but look, this is something that they can build on. They have good pitching. They have good, young, exciting pieces in Corbin Carroll and company. But they're just not where Philly is right now. They're not at all where Philly is right now. And it's going to take the Diamondbacks stealing 2 on the road in Philadelphia to win the series. That's going to be
they
very,
did steal
very
2 difficult. In Los Angeles. So they have a precedent set for it in this postseason.
The only reason why I say it's more difficult is because there's a lot of suit and ties in Los Angeles. There isn't many suit and ties in Philadelphia at those games, as the Spit and Chicklets say. It's a lot of rowdy blue collar motherfuckers that will say fuck you and to your kid as well if you're wearing the opposing colors. Okay, Los Angeles is a little more preppy, a little more, you know what, baseball, our sport, we love baseball, all that. And let me put some money on the team. Now, Philadelphia is a little bit of a different story when it comes to postseason baseball. So, yeah, I'd love to see the D-backs come back and win. I just don't think it's possible at this point.
Switching over to the NL to the AL side, excuse me. We had 2 teams that both swept the Astros won 3-1 over the Twins, like I said. But the Rangers, they swept the Rays, they swept the Orioles. They have not lost in the postseason. They won the 2 games to start off in Houston. So now they have two games coming up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Are these Texas Rangers the team to beat in the MLB playoffs right now?
They are absolute road warriors, Jimmy. You know how many postseason games they played at home? 1.
Oh, 1. Shit.
They played 1. They went to Tampa Bay, 1-2 out of 3. They went to who did they play last series? Fuck, who did they play?
Orioles, Baltimore.
They went to Baltimore, won both on the road, won one game at home. They're going to they go back into Dallas Fort Worth where they play their second home game in this playoffs, and they haven't lost yet. Absolute road.
You've been to a home game there, by the way.
I have been. I looked at the statistics. I've been to more Rangers baseball games the last 3 years than I did just this season alone. Rockies games. I went to one Rockies game this year. I went to three Rangers home games the last 2.5-3 years. It's wild to think about. But hey, like I said, I have a Rangers shirt. Jimmy knows I have a Rangers shirt, so you know I'm loving it a little bit. And like I said, you know what? The other three teams in these playoffs have won it. They've all won it. Why not give Texas a little love and see what the Rangers are all about? D-backs have won it. Astros obviously won it last year. Phillies won it back in the 2010s. It's time to get a little different, little something different. And look, there's a lot of names to like on the scene. Corey Seager, Josh Jung, a lot of great stories. John Gray, former Colorado Rocky, Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, Nathan Eovaldi. They have everything they want from the pitching side of things. And their batters are getting hot at the right time. So I love what the Rangers team is doing.
No, I haven't been paying attention quite as much. I obviously listened to Part of My Take, and they've been talking about it with the Phillies. But it's been exciting, and so far the World Series is always fun to watch because it is America's pastime, and I'm excited to see who's going to end up making it there.
Hey, Rangers Phillies World Series is going to be absolutely electric. That's all I'm going to say. That's going to be absolutely electric.
It's a lot of media behind it. It's a non LA New York final, and there's still a lot of media behind it in Dallas and Philly. Let's talk about the competition that we have going because, Nico, goddammit, you had another perfect week, man.
Like, oh, man. It's like I know.
And I tell you that I have to pick the games first and you have to pick the game second. It doesn't matter because you can still – either way, we either pick the same games or not. But I will say the two games that I lost, so you got Kansas City, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Dallas, and they all won. The two games that I lost, Tennessee and Los Angeles, they had chance. They had the chances. It wasn't like they got killed. It wasn't like I was taking a flyer on some random. Like, those were two upsets that could have happened. Obviously, they didn't. So, I ended with a 3-2 record. Nico ended with a 5-0 record. So, this week.
I will say, Jimmy, if you would have had previous knowledge knowing that Tennessee flew in Thursday like the Bills did, I think you would have lost the Ravens. So.
I dealt with jet lag trying to play football. We could barely do a walkthrough without pads. You cannot play a football game within 24 hours of landing in a different time zone across the world. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm sorry, Mike Vrabel. I know that clocks don't exist in your universe. I know that. I get that now. I should have known that going in. There's no London game to talk about this week. And the Bengals have a bye, so I even had to throw in a game that's neither one of our teams. I threw in Atlanta and Tampa Bay because that's technically for number one in the NFC South right now. That is a number one on the line. So we're going to talk about that game, but obviously going back to last week, the Broncos still lose in Kansas City.
You can just move on from that game, but we don't need to talk about that.
The Bengals got a win, but the offense looked like absolute garbage in the second half. And Ja'Marr Chase, I have an issue with because if you're going to say I'm always fucking open and then you don't fight for a ball that's your I know the quarterback threw a bad ball. I know Burrow threw a bad ball in that play. Fight for the ball. Knock it out. I said it in the Philly game. In the last play of the game when Jalen Hurts threw his last interception, the guy still came up and tried to punch the ball out of the defender's hands.
Seattle's a very
show good some team. Kind of effort on that.
I will say Seattle's a very good team. So that's a good win. That's a very good
win. And Geno, it's an ugly win. Quarterback than Geno, they probably win that game.
Well. Maybe Mr. what's it called? Mr. Unlimited can go back. And they can get Russ back.
And they'll take that deal. Trust me. They ain't taking him back. He's probably going to end up in Chicago, which is where Sierra wanted to be in the first place.
I love that.
Let's the games that we're going to pick this week, Thursday Night Football, Jacksonville at New Orleans, and then Atlanta at Tampa Bay, Packers at Broncos, Sunday Night Football, Dolphins, Eagles, Monday Night Football, 49ers, Vikings. No Bengals game this week. They are on their bye. They made it to the bye week 3-3. So let's just talk about that real quickly. Burrow looks good, except for that second half, which I really have no idea why they looked like they did in the second half. But that touchdown that he threw to Tyler Boyd in the first half, that was vintage Burrow. because he did the whole back pedal. I'm going to look at four different receivers and then boom, threw it right in there to Tyler Boyd. That one was like, oh, the offense is back. They didn't look like they were back the rest of the time, but now you get an extra week of rest. We're going to come back. I don't know who we play coming out of the bye, but I'm very confident in what we're going to have. But let's talk about the Thursday night football game, and I'll let you take it because, like I said, it doesn't matter whether I pick first or last. I have to be able to pick these games correctly. If I can start picking them correctly consistently, then we may have a competition on our hands. But for Thursday night football, Jacksonville, two wins in a row. New Orleans looks like they're kind of floundering. They've had to experiment with quarterbacks, and people are saying maybe Dennis Allen's time in New Orleans is up. What are you thinking for this Thursday night football matchup?
I'm a believer in Jacksonville. I love what Etienne's doing for them. I think he has been such a big X factor in them winning ball games. Look, you come off of a London win, obviously, and then look, the Colts are not what the Colts should be, especially now that possibly Gardner Minshew is the quarterback the rest of the season with Anthony Richardson injured. I believe in the Jaguars. I don't understand the minus one for the Saints. I really don't. The only reason, especially without Derek Carr possibly, like Jameis Winston at quarterback, I'm hammering Jaguars. I am doing that 24/7, 9 times out of 10, every day of the week. I do not believe in what New Orleans is doing. I think that their division has gotten better than them, so much better than them. And for whatever reason, they just – with an opportunity, with a door wide open to win your division, and with Tom Brady leaving and all these other pieces gone, you have a chance to win it, and you're just falling apart. I don't believe them. I don't believe in them giving Jacksonville.
I also have Jacksonville because I've ridden them for the past two weekends, and they've helped me out. So I'm picking the Jaguars because they look good, and I agree with you. The Saints should not be favored by a point, whether it's on the road or at home right now. Jacksonville looks like the better team, and they look like they have the more solidified identity. Speaking about the NFC South, like I mentioned, the Falcons and Bucks technically for number one in the division, especially depending on how Thursday night football goes. Falcons are favored by 2.5 over the Buccaneers. In this one, it comes down to which quarterback do I favor a little bit more at this point. And Desmond Ritter, he's putting up numbers. He's proving to me that I should be starting him in fantasy football because I think he scores about 20 points a game in fantasy football. Does he win you football games? No, he doesn't. So in my mind, Baker Mayfield, it's a good comeback story. He looks good. I know that he studies film. It's at home. The Falcons being favored by 2.5 at this point, the Buccaneers won a Super Bowl within the last 5 years. You can't tell me that Tampa Bay isn't liable to win this game. And for that reason, I'm picking Baker Mayfield and I'm picking Tampa Bay. Shout out to our guys over at Out of Your Falcon Mind, but I've tried to ride with your guys for the past 2 weeks and it's totally come back and bit me in the ass. So I'm going with Tampa Bay at home, especially.
I'm riding Tampa Bay also. I absolutely am. I look, are the Falcons playing at home? No. So Desmond Ritter can only win home football games. Obviously I think the record is like he's undefeated at home through high school or something like that. Like every game he started, like he's won at home since high school. They're on the road. They're going into Tampa, which Baker Mayfield's done better. Tampa Bay has been a little interesting story because Mike Evans, apparently he's been a little worrisome regarding drops and his effort level and everything, but Tampa Bay still has a chance to win this division. They absolutely do. I think, in my opinion, I think they're the front runner to win the division currently. And if it wasn't for the QB problems that Atlanta has, I think they'd be, it's 1-2. I think it's 1-2. I'm going to ride Tampa as well. I like Baker. I like what they're doing defensively as well. Like you said, the defense last year wasn't very good. The offensive line, worthy enough, Ryan Jensen out for the year again, looks a lot better than it did last year. And then also, defense looks like it's starting to get back to that Super Bowl form. So give me the Bucks.
We're both on Tampa Bay in that one.
Both dogs, both underdogs too that we just took, which is
wild. Yeah, I don't agree with the line, but then again, maybe they know something that we don't. That's why Vegas has the big shiny buildings, and that's why we're doing a show based out of my parents' internet or my parents' basement. Moving forward, we have your Broncos. Packers coming into Denver this week. They are favored by 1. A couple of disappointing losses in a row for the Packers. I believe they're coming off their bye. Jordan Love hasn't looked great, but I know it is a good time. Yeah, I'm going with the Packers. I know, I'm sure, because you're still fading the Broncos, right?
Yeah, I'm a man of my word. I'm a man of good faith, and a man that does not go back on what he says. Give me the Packers. I'm not an idiot. I will say this: the Broncos' defense has looked better the last 2 weeks. Okay, better the last couple weeks since the 70-point debacle. Then all of a sudden, your defense looks halfway better. You hold the Chiefs under 20 points, and then your offense decides to fuck itself again. Yeah, if you haven't noticed, I'm so over football and so over the Broncos. I like I said, it's you don't wear Broncos stuff in the city anymore. You don't. And look, I will post next Tuesday when I'm at the banner ceremony of how the city has turned into a basketball town, because it is a 5:30 start game. Banner rises at 5:00. That building will be filled at fucking 3:00. I guarantee it, because that's how much the city wants a good team and loves its Nuggets. This team, the city, hates this Broncos. The city, they're losing their city. They're losing their fucking city. And this team is one step away from trading everybody, because Halloween is a week and a half from Tuesday, whenever October 31st is. Yeah, a week from next Tuesday. So if you don't start making deals and you just keep everybody and don't try to trade people away, George Payton, you're gone. You're gone, because you can't get rid of your head coach at this point. Your head coach, you're stuck with him for 4 years because you traded draft picks away. So George Payton, you're gone. Russell Wilson, we're going to buy you out. $82 million, and we're gonna go get Drake May and go from there, because this team needs a reset so badly. This team has a loser mentality, a losing aura around the team that is just sick and tired of it. And look, for the guys that are good on this team, the Justin Simmons of the world, Patrick Surtains of the world, I hope they get better. I hope they did, because they deserve better. Justin Simmons was at the flag football championship tournament that I was at, the women's state championship game with my cousin, with Arvada West. He was there showing support, because it was at the Broncos practice facility. So he was there. It was their off week. It was Saturday, obviously off week. They played on Saturday, so they had Sunday off. He was there at facilities, showed face. He's a great person in the community. Patrick Surtain, still a top corner in football, in my opinion. They deserve better. They deserve better, because this team is just so bad, and just fucking not even worth 5 minutes of conversation, which I can't believe I just let myself do.
We're both on the Packers. I think that they're going to be able to do what they want to. For Sunday Night Football, I'm going to give you the first pick, and I'm going to fade whoever you pick. So between the Eagles and the Dolphins, now the Eagles, obviously, they were undefeated. They have their first loss of the season. The Dolphins went down 14 to Carolina, only to come back and totally steamroll them. And obviously the Dolphins have a fresh spot in our collective mind with what happened in Denver. Who are you picking? What are your thoughts on this one? And I'm going to fade whoever you pick.
The biggest worrisome here for the Miami Dolphins is that the Philadelphia Eagles are good at what, Jimmy?
They're running, good at running the ball.
Running the football. And guess what Carolina did to go up 14-0?
Run the football.
That's where things get worrisome. Give me the Eagles getting back on track. I am a fan of what the Dolphins are doing. I do like that team top to bottom. I think this. Like you said, I think it's game of the week. I really do think it's the game of the week. I think it's the most highly contested game of the week. I think it's two teams that have very, very high hopes. Dolphins, very, very tough. But right now, I still, like I said, I think the Eagles do not lose two in a row. That's where I'm pointing this on, plain and simple. Dolphins are a good team. The Eagles are a better team, and they will not lose two in a row, plain and simple.
I'm going to put it on the Dolphins' offense. Jalen Carter was injured last week. I don't know if he's coming back this week, but even if he is, he's susceptible. And the Miami offense, they have really good receivers. And Philadelphia has lost a lot of starting cornerbacks and receivers and safeties. So the fact that Miami has really good receivers and Philadelphia secondary is banged up, I'm fine. You have the Eagles, I have the Dolphins. That'll probably be the only one that we're different on, because then we're going to go to Monday night, and it's another one where it's like, why are these two teams playing again? Why is this in prime time? The Vikings, congratulations. Beat the Bears. The Broncos beat the Bears. Congratulations.
Careful with your words. With your girlfriend being a Minnesota fan is all I'm going to say.
So. She's sitting right outside. So yeah, as we're recording this.
Careful for your words. But I will say a couple things. The 49ers looked very, very vulnerable. And I will give a massive, massive kudos to the best defense in football right now, which is the Cleveland Browns. And I find it very, very hard to find a better defense right now than what Myles Garrett is doing and what Myles Garrett did to Trent Williams every single down. Myles Garrett looks like a man amongst boys. He made Trent Williams fall on his ass more than times they can count. And look, Brock Purdy – and look, we gave Brock Purdy a lot of praise. A lot of praise. When you lose Christian McCaffrey, and when you lose Deebo Samuel, all of a sudden, Thor without his hammer looks like a normal guy. Funny enough, is all I'm going to say. I think Run CMC will be back. I think Deebo, that's the big question mark there. But when the Avengers only have Spider-Man, you're facing when you're facing goddamn Thanos and Myles Garrett on the defensive side of football. Brock Purdy ain't gonna be able to do much. Is all I'm gonna say. That's the best comparison I can do. But the Minnesota Vikings are not the Cleveland Browns, and defensively at all. Their offense, I think, could put up points with them. But that's if the San Francisco 49ers defense decides to fall apart, and they don't have Justin Jefferson. Kirk Cousins apparently said he's not going to waive his no trade clause. So he's going to be –
you're going to been listening to Creed in the locker room.
So, yeah.
Can you take me higher?
I would not be surprised if Minnesota somehow pulled this off because of back-to-back games and San Francisco being banged up. But, no, I'm giving – give me a 49ers.
I was going to say, I hope that's your pick. Now, we're on the, no, both on the 49ers. The only difference is Sunday Night Football. I agree with you. It's probably the best matchup. Recap, we both have Jacksonville over the Saints. We both have Tampa Bay over the Buccaneers. We both have Green Bay over the Broncos. You have Philadelphia. I have Miami for Sunday Night Football. And then we both have the 49ers over the Vikings. Very vanilla, very similar to what each of us was going to pick. But I have to try and make sure my record doesn't look too bad by the end of the season.
I don't get this good of a record with just picking against you every week. I go with what my gut's telling me.
And you already had the three games. It's messing with my head. I'm trying to get the one game back. I do think that Miami over Philadelphia is not too far-fetched at this point. The other games that we talked about, yeah, it's pretty one-sided. At least that's how I see it.
The slate is not great this weekend, is all I'll say. The slate is I think the second best game of the weekend, and I know we didn't pick this, but I think it's Baltimore-Detroit. I really do think that may be the second
best game. I hope Detroit smacks the piss out of Baltimore.
Detroit, man. Detroit, the 5-1 Detroit Lions, baby. How about that?
They're my family team because they're built on their offensive line. So that's the team that we root for as a family because the Broncos are – obviously we can't root for them. So we root for Detroit as a family.
I love it. Like I said, I'll raise my hand to be the Detroit. Like I said, we'll when it comes to playoffs, if the Bengals don't get their shit together and the Broncos obviously won't get their shit together, we'll be a Lions show. We'll root on the Lions to win the Super Bowl because we like little cities that have never won anything being good.
Maybe we can get Eminem on the show. That's just wishful thinking, probably. Hopefully everybody enjoyed episode 156 of the Farting on the Bench podcast. It was a good one. We talked about a lot of different stuff. Make sure you check it out on either our YouTube channel, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow, subscribe, leave a 5-star rating or review. Leave a like and a comment on YouTube. And be sure to follow at FEOTBpod and at @Variety_Sports_. I'll be back, like I said, tomorrow live with Sunday Scaries and Top of the Mountain. Both those shows will be live Thursday, and then we'll have our regular shows coming up this week, and I will be back on Sunday night for Talking the Gridiron. And Nico's going to make a Sunday Scaries appearance at some point. I know that we mentioned it. He and I worked it out. But anyways, got a lot of cool stuff coming up for the weekend. Anything else you want to send the people off for before we let them go for the week, Nico?
Before the season starts, the World Championship is still here in Denver. That's all I'm going to say. Before the season begins, and the real season begins, because one of the real seasons have begun here in Denver, and that's on the ice in the puck with the little game of puck that you and I are about to go watch, and then obviously the best team in the world is back, and I cannot wait.
We're gonna see how it shapes up. Be sure to follow, like I said, and we will see you guys. For myself, Jimmy Pilato, and my co-host Nico Bryant, episode 156 of Far End the Bench podcast. We will catch you guys next week.
Peace.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.